Good morning. Today is Tuesday, the 4th of October. Joining us this morning is noted CPA, Bill McCauley.
Can you believe it? October. I noticed this morning as I was leaving the house, it was,
dark.
A quarter to seven, and it wasn't light. And I was like, that stinks. Anyway, I like long days. So
yeah, I've been noticing walking that the sun is not rising before six now. No. So I hope the flashlight battery doesn't crap out on me halfway through. Walk and wave at the same time.
Get one of those headlamp.
Like the coal miner.
Yeah, they have they're lightweight. You can get the really nice lightweight ones. They work. That way, and then that way all day you can have, like, on your forehead.
Yeah, it could look like a minion, huh?
Impression, like you've had something too tight on your head.
Yeah. That goes back to your football days, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. I bet you liked last night, huh?
I did, yeah. And I noticed in the post game they had Garoppolo, and he had a big old red mark on his forehead from his helmet.
From walking with a light on his forehead.
Yeah, and for Garoppolo, anything that doesn't make him so darn pretty is probably,
it really tears us up. All right, you ready for a Why Do We Say It?
I am.
Grin like a Cheshire cat.
Oh, goodness. Why do we say that? Well, must be the nature of I don't know, Brian. I don't have a clue. I'd be wild conjecture.
All right. Cheshire County in England was an independent political unit for centuries. Justices of the peace, named by the king, had no jurisdiction, and the forest became notorious as a refuge for highwaymen. Bad guys, not singers.
Right.
Yeah, okay. During the reign of King Richard III, one of my faves, a new forest warden was selected. Mr. Catterling put a stop to poaching and captured dozens of felons, more than 100 of whom were hanged. Catterling took great pride in his record and, grinning broadly, he presided over every execution. His unpleasant leer became so familiar that anyone smiling broadly was described as grinning like the Cheshire Catterling. In parts of Cheshire, natives still swear that the fellow who cleaned up the region causes us to say a person who smiles broadly is grinning like a Cheshire cat. Whatever the origin, the expression has been in frequent use since at least the late 1700s, and that's where writers like Lewis Carroll made it even more popular. Alice in
Wonderland.
Yeah,
yes,
okay.
I'm not a
total neophyte.
No, I'm not a total troglodyte.
See. Ripping out the big words today.
There you
go.
Yes.
So has there been any kind of resolution on the forgiveness of educational loans? I keep seeing some things.
California's working on it, and they're saying they will have something in place. We'll wait and see. At this point, we...
Taxing or forgiving?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're going to have to wait and see if that even happens, number one.
There is a little blowback on the total
numbers. There's a question of... There are some questions associated with the administration, basically by fiat, declaring that student loans are going to be forgiven under COVID-related provisions. Anyway, I honestly don't know. I don't know the merits of any particular argument. So I'm assuming eventually when that starts, there's a good chance it could get tied up in court. So it may start and stop, and then we may figure out whether the Biden administration really has the statutory authority or otherwise.
Yeah, that's in question as well.
To be able to do that. And then, so I'm thinking, I think California's probably going to get out ahead of it, and they're probably going to try to get it put into dealt with but they've also said it might not occur until they'll get it done, but it might not be done till early 2023. So in my world, that
way too early.
That is that's kind of short sheeting the bed. You gotta get stuff done timely. I guess. we get what we pay for our politicians. They're all going home, so they stop doing work. They're going to go home. They're gonna campaign, and we all think that's fine. That they should go home and spend a bunch of time campaigning on our nickel. Anyway, I don't know.
Better than letting them stay there and continue to create, huh?
I suppose, but when you see things that don't get done, and they say, "Well, we can't do that until later," because and you look at California's process, and this is, again, I'm just grinding, but you look and go, how many bills get stacked up at the governor's desk? And all these decisions get made, and none of this stuff really sees the light of day. It just gets signed. And it astounds me. Generally, this country has embraced kind of a two-party rule with the idea that one balances the other. We are so out of balance right now because there is no check. That as it stands, Democratic Party can just do whatever it's going to do, and then it's like, which of our ideas are we going to execute on, which ones aren't? And that's all fine and dandy. I understand. I live in California, and that's what the rules are. But it is, I do find it a little frustrating that the way you find out about the details is it's more of the, well, wait till we get this signed and enacted, and then you'll find out what great things are going on.
Pelosi's lane.
Yeah. So I think we have a lot of that going on in California. Now, that being said, if you look at what the Governor Newsom did, he didn't refuse to sign certain bills that based on the idea that California's going to have a decline in revenue and we're already seeing that the California revenue projections were unduly rosy. Revenues are not coming in at that pace, and as you watch California's budget is so subject to economic conditions because so much of the tax is paid by the highest end of the income tax structure. I think there's a shift in that category. Cuts are coming.
Yeah.
So I hope we're being probative in spending quote unquote the surplus that we have right now, and not committing to programmatic expenditures that we're going to be committed to each year, because we're going to have, revenues are likely to take a dip once again.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Bill McCauley. Bill, looking at some of the different challenges that are out there, the 87,000 IRS agent hire. Now, whether or not
Did they have those guys all hired yet, Brian?
Whether that's a target, a goal, just a positioner to throw out, who knows? But what does that mean at ground zero?
Well, we don't exactly know, but first of all, you can't hire 87,000 people overnight.
No, I think it was like a 5 or 6 year ramp up or some.
A lot of their existing agents, I mean, as I understand it, if you age profile the existing workforce for the IRS, it skews a bit senior. And a lot of those might be just replacements. A lot of people are going to be. I mean, my point is, if you're going to grow the workforce by 87,000, you may have to grow it by 115,000
new individuals
in 5 to 10 years to be able to maintain the same. To have the current base plus this additional 87,000 employees that they're talking about. Now, that's going to be a long-term deal. We don't, you know, and those jobs are going to fill lots of roles. It won't just be enforcement. I mean, I think one of the natural reactions is, oh my gosh, it's just going to all be enforcement people. And I think that's clearly not going to work. They wouldn't have enough other people to support that level of
right. It'd be so top heavy or bottom heavy.
So yeah. You know, you have to fill out an organization chart with people supporting people in different positions and whatnot. So it won't be 87,000 people. Although I have a few people, I've joked you're going to have your own private IRS agent.
And there are some people that are afraid that the profiling that we hear is so negative in other applications of government that's really what this is all about.
There are some people that have fear about that, no question.
Yeah.
Are there specialists? Think about this, Brian. I'm sorry I interrupted you asking your question, but think about this. They're going to try to hire 87,000 people, and where are they going to find them, and what's their knowledge going to be?
Oh, yeah, all rookies,
I mean,
probably.
I've been working in tax for almost 40 years, and I don't know at all. I mean, you know, and my experience when I work with agents is they don't know at all. And so I think, I mean, are they going to try to hire CPAs? Well, there aren't that many. Who are they going to target?
Yeah, where's
to
the labor
fill
pool?
Those positions? Yeah. Where are they going to get those people? And how long is it going to take to train them up? And I think it's going to take quite a while. I mean, there are people who are going to be able to do certain things, but their understanding is going to be limited kind of to what they're looking at, and there could be another big issue sitting there that they wouldn't even know to think about because their training is going to be narrow.
Do IRS agents, when you have the interaction, do they tend to be question askers, or do they tend to be people who are of a position that need to be persuaded that position is not as it appears?
So first thing I'm going to do is knock on wood before I even say anything. Okay. That was me knocking on wood. The IRS, I haven't had an IRS audit for a couple of years. And the last audits we've had, you know, people audits, have been out of Santa Rosa. They no longer is an office in Eureka, so when people get pulled, it's been audits that in my most recent experiences have been with auditor in Santa Rosa. What we tend to see, and there are some different kinds of audits. Some things are just a letter. We just saw this and we thought this was unusual. We'd like you to shed additional information on this item.
Give us a couple paragraphs, kind of thing.
That's what we call a correspondence audit. It's just, you know, they ask about something to tell us, can you provide documentation or tell us what this is? Or there might be a couple of somethings like that. And then you get to, you know, more robust levels of audits where they want to come in and they want to see, for example, a business's records. And generally the way that looks, there'll be an entry letter that will come out. They'll say, you know, we're going to audit you, and you know, we want to arrange to do that. We want to arrange to have documents furnished to us in this manner, and here's a list of what we want to see. And it might be the general ledger, and it might be and now for a lot of clients, business clients who use QuickBooks, they want a QuickBooks version. They want to copy the QuickBooks file, which nobody is very excited to furnish to the IRS.
Because it has a whole lot more than just the areas that they're interested in.
Yeah, and it can have other years and other information that, you know, people just don't want to voluntarily furnish. And so, you know, you can go into a QuickBooks file and strip off the earlier years and kind of freeze it so you're just giving them the year they're asking for. But it is an interesting thing. They'll ask for copies of bank statements, and they'll ask for invoices for certain transactions. And so then you might have a list of 25 items on an entry letter that said these are the things we want to get, and then there's kind of a correlation of when and how this is going to be done. So that tends to focus the audit on those issues.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with CPA Bill McCauley. Billy, you'd said during the last segment that there are different levels of audit. I think most of us think that it is a show-all, tell-all, full top-to-bottom, this is a life-changing event. But we kind of tend to think the same of being pulled over for a speeding ticket, too.
Yeah, there is... There's a difference between getting pulled over for a speeding ticket and having a SWAT team surrounding your house.
Right. Both are life moments that we tend to remember. Well, at least the pulling over the speeding ticket part.
Yeah.
And I would think the same thing would be with an audit, even if it was just, can you clarify this one item?
Yeah.
You know, the heart goes a little funny and...
There's a clench factor.
Yeah, I think bodily functions is what I was going to say.
With any time you get a... I think anybody gets correspondence from the IRS or the Franchise Tax Board to a lesser degree, but they can be more intransigent to work with in some cases. In some cases, not. So the point being, I guess... is that, you know, we all kind of, you know, when you get a letter from the IRS, you know, the first thing I do is I'll have a client call me, I got a letter from the IRS, and they'll tell me that one sentence they're focused on. I'm like, I really just need to see the whole letter. You know, well, I can read it to you. Can you
nuances.
Tell what tax year it is? I don't see that on there. Well, it's because they put it in a weird place. And, it matters. Are we talking about 2019, 2020, 2021? You know, I just had a client get a letter from California for 2018. Interestingly, I looked it up. I'd written the same letter to explain the same thing in 2015. So apparently 2015, 2016, 2017, they had institutional memory. But they got to 2018, and now the four-year statute's going to run for California. And so they're sending this letter out, and they're telling me that it's wrong. And it's like, no, it wasn't wrong. And it wasn't
precedent.
Wrong the last time I corresponded with you on this issue. So I do think there, you know, that immediate reaction we have to going, oh, I got a letter and they're asking for something. And so, but a lot of times that correspondence audit can be handled relatively simply. They're just asking, is this right? And can you give us more information about one or two or three items?
So almost looking for confirmation.
Yeah. It's really looking for, yeah. Or you going, oops, that, you know. I put an extra zero in there,
yeah.
Or whatever the case might be. People, generally we don't worry about those too much in our office. They come in and you deal with them. I mean, every once in a while they'll ask a question and you'll go to the client and say, I need documentation for this, and they have trouble furnishing it. The point is, you know, they're relatively stress-free compared to the more... The programmatic type audits. They do some, they used to call them TCMPs, Taxpayer Compliance something plan. And they would come in and they would audit everything in your return.
Oh, the field audit. We had one of those. Mom went through one of those.
They would use it as, it was a compliance measurement program audit. So it was Taxpayer Compliance Measurement Program. And they would take that and they would develop statistics on the accuracy of particular line items and things, and it would help them. They would take and they'd have 5,000 of them or whatever, and they would take those and they would assemble statistics based on this entire population of audits that they gave people these incredible, and believe me, they highly unpleasant to go through.
Yeah,
they have to substantiate everything.
And it establishes like benchmark references for that industry for the next period of time.
Correct. And then that, and then they'll turn and say, okay, now we know we're going to go after entertainment expenses for radio stations. And so they're going to come in, well, they'll go after entertainment. Meals and entertainment, they're going to go after
typically,
pretty
yeah.
much everybody.
Yeah.
But, you know, they'll learn and they'll say, okay, we know we're going to ask about this. I had a couple audits this was a few years ago, and they were both related to the forest products industry. And they all they really wanted to do was substantiate revenue. So really what they wanted to do, they wanted
gross statements. Gross receipts.
They wanted copies of invoices, and they tried to line up what was billed for the year, what was collected, what happened. You know, so they were thinking, it would appear to me, based on what was going on with those exams, that people were not reporting all the income, that some things were slipping outside. And so they were looking, they wanted to see, okay, what are all your invoices? And they were running statistical analysis on the invoices and going, what did you deposit? What was your beginning accounts receivable? What was your ending accounts receivable? Does this make sense? What did you have that you wrote off? And that's really what the focus was. So that probably was as a result of some type of overall compliance assessment where they identified risk in particular industries. So it depends kind of what you end up going through.
So,
I think what they decided was the TCMP audits back 10 or 15 years ago were so onerous that they had to move away from that program because it was giving the IRS a real black eye because the people who went through it were screaming bloody murder and not unjustifiably. And so I think the IRS now does it more. They'll go in and they'll do
a little from here,
a little from there, instead of just saying, hey, we're just going to bloody certain taxpayers. They're going to bloody more taxpayers, but they're going to take information and be able
and
to
not as much blood.
Right.
Are there specialists within the audit team?
At the IRS?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so they know what they're looking at.
So they've got pension plan specialists. They've got, I imagine they have all kinds of specialty information and personnel for all this virtual currency, you know.
Because, yeah, that's a whole different dynamic, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and it's there's a catch-up factor that has to be played, whether it's in the tax preparer community or whether it's from the IRS. It's also information reporting has been weak, so you don't get 1099s that are in near as good a condition as you get from a typical brokerage activity in an investment account.
So they new industries, I would think, go through with that.
They do. Yeah. They have industry focused. They have people that deal with law firms. They have groups that deal with, take your pick. They're out there. They got groups that audit banks. They got groups that audit, whatever.
They probably have groups that audit CPA firms.
What?
KINS, News and Information Time, hits 8:43.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right, you can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable, so book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Bill McCauley. Bill, as you look at some of the different challenges that are out there, new regulations that come into effect, are a lot of us aware of what the repercussions of those tend to be? I'm thinking of the challenge that PG&E has thrown at Fortuna and Southern Humboldt, with limiting the number of hookups now for the next little bit. Well, if somebody had just purchased some property and was planning on putting in a development and was unaware of that because it hadn't been shared, okay, they got challenges. is there anything in the tax codes or any kind of relief that's available for folks like that, that just have circumstances change through the regulatory environment, or is it just suck it up?
It's more of a suck it up, buttercup kind of situation. It, generally, the tax law does not have provisions that say, oh, things changed on you, poor you.
But can it be interpreted differently?
Let me take another step. I mean, if you were considering a development in Fortuna, and you conclude, as an example, you had 2 acres and you were going to put whatever number of properties on it because you were going to do this development, and then you find out, I can't do it because circumstances have changed, and meanwhile you've spent $50,000 in engineering and other studies to get
preliminary
things done, and then
you
realize, I'm not going to be able to do this for X number of years. I'm not really willing to sit here and wait. So I'm going to sell this project off. Well, you couldn't potentially write off the abandoned project costs if you're in the trader business of development.
If that's your neighborhood, yeah.
And so there, it's not, you know, or it would be attached to the property if you turned around and sold it, and you might generate a loss that way. But the point is, generally, there's not like, oh, bad things happen to you. You've got these nice provisions that are going to help you. There are some casualty loss provisions. Those have been kind of limited in some
respects. How about environmental law changing? All of a sudden, the left-handed snail darter becomes endangered, and you happen to have that nesting on your property, and now all of a sudden that property is no longer usable in the fashion that you had anticipated.
Are you going to sell it? Or are you going to keep it?
Well, I mean, okay, if it's not usable, and let's say the state or the feds don't want it as a preserve, the value is just tanked.
Well, there can be a taking. You know, if, as an example, you have a piece of property and somebody says, you know, there's going to be a utility line run through the middle of it. Well, then that's kind of an involuntary conversion. That's what we call an involuntary conversion of the property. And you may be, you know, basically, so there may be some tax relief for that. Or at least temporary tax relief. So, you know, somebody takes part of your property because they want to do a freeway overpass and you have pasture land, and so they take part of that. You may be able to avail yourself of the involuntary conversion rules and do a tax-deferred kind of thing and replace the property because the government's going to buy it from you and take it, and then you can turn around and replace it within a certain window of time. So there are some things out there, depending on facts and circumstances, what kind of impact that particular person is experiencing as a result of.
So let's go back to the taking. You've got your 2 acres, and you're looking to build on it. It's no longer available for that purpose, and you sell it at market value.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Market value is plus 50%.
Yeah.
But its impact is because it was taken and it was purchased by a governmental entity. Do you get tagged on that 50% capital gain? Or?
Well, if it's taken if there's a taking, if there's a condemnation of the property, then the tax law would allow you to defer it by replacing it. So you can take the proceeds and replace them.
As long as you purchase another piece of property somewhere within a time frame.
Yeah. But, boy, that's something you need to be having some very specific conversations about as opposed to
rate. Yeah, unless it's a $5 piece of property, then who cares? I don't think there's too many $5 pieces of property, though, that are 2 acres.
Yeah, probably not.
Other than vertical. Yeah. Oh, boy. No, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Go out and have some fun. See everybody tomorrow.